The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Aren't even warm.
No.
It's good.
We don't need warm chairs. We don't need no stinky warm chairs.
Yeah, we don't need warm chairs, but you do have to talk into the microphone because I can't hear you.
Sound check one.
Hey, so you're listening to We the People Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So,
good morning.
Lauren.
Good morning. We have a guest this morning.
We have a guest this morning, and it turned out he was staying in town, and then it turned out he was staying across the street, and it's like, well, hey, why don't you come over, and then don't call us on the phone, because it... So today we will have no reception problems, no one will be disconnected.
Unlike Thursday, we will have internet today.
I didn't think about that.
I put your address into my navigator. It said 51 seconds.
That's pretty funny. Because I saw there was no car out front, and I thought, well, that's weird. And I looked up, and I'm like, it's because it's across the street. I never noticed. I guess I don't stay across the street very often, so I've never really cared.
Yeah, just in case everybody was wondering, this is We the People Radio.
Oh, they weren't wondering. They're like, oh, these are the knuckleheads on Sunday morning. Go ahead.
The combination of the Thunderbird Hotel in exchange for promotional consideration. Not really.
Nice, Bob.
Yeah, so you're listening to We the People Radio with Aaron and Bill. And if you'd like to chat, we're on wethepeopleradio.us. Mm-hmm. Or you can call us at 605-4567.
And we're talking about economics. Lauren figured out the Obama economic plan was going to be bad long before a lot of the voters did, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it was pretty much November 7th, 2008.
You're like,
is when it struck me.
Holy crap, Batman, this is going to be bad. So do you still use the term free market warrior?
I do.
Because I like it.
It's changed. Originally, it was going to be the name of my store. But then they threw my store out, so it became my name. It was like I woke up one morning and it referred to me instead of the store.
Nice.
That's always good.
Nice. So the Obama plan worked for you, like, right out of the box.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if it was the Obama plan, but it was certainly the Simon Mall plan, which was not to have a conservative store in their mall.
Oh, what were you going to do? I've read about this.
Yeah, well, this is my first political escapade. Is I wanted to have a store that would specifically cater to conservative themed merchandise.
And, how dare you?
Yes, that's right.
What were you thinking?
So they threw us out of the mall, which in the short term was a good thing.
Really?
Yeah, because it was about a month between when they decided to throw us out, when they actually threw us out, and we had protests in the parking lot. It was on the Drudge Report like four separate times. I was on the Glenn Beck Show over this. And my sales went through the roof.
You're all better than that crummy little store.
I need another mall store. It was cheap advertising. There was a point where about 50% of the business going on in that mall was my store.
Nice.
largely through their own their own stupidity and their own actions and thinking that this was a smart way to do business.
They were just going to scuttle you. It was just going to shuffle you off to Buffalo, and it's like, oh but no wait,
that's right.
Oh my gosh. And so where was the mall?
It was in Concord, North Carolina.
Oh.
Which is, they were in a county that votes Republican. This is not like.
Yeah, I was thinking California.
They never met one before. This was North Carolina. And what's interesting is we were there for a couple months, and everything was fine. It wasn't exactly a secret what my store sold. You could just come by and see it. It wasn't like we were pretending to be a shoe store, and you had
you were putting out conservative propaganda,
and you had to have the secret knock to find the conservative stuff.
You had a front door, not a back. Door, huh?
it was pretty obvious, and we got along with everybody. And as I said, it's a conservative county in North Carolina, and everything was lovely until the national, actually I should say international owners of called Simon Property Group, who own the mall. And by the way, they own a mall near you, wherever you are. They're the largest owners of malls on earth.
Oh, really? That's good to know in case we want to open a mall store and get some advertising.
Yeah.
And they are huge liberal Democrats. They give millions and millions and millions to the Democratic Party every year, although they assured me that the department that gives money to the Democrats and the department that throws conservatives out of the mall are completely
totally different.
Totally different departments. Yep. They never talk to each other.
an amazing coincidence.
There's like a Chinese wall between them.
Yes,
and
yes.
So
it was purely
coincidental. And so when it was the local mall, I was fine and everyone was happy. But when it struck the national people, that's when it became an issue.
It snuck its way into the corporate headlines, and they were like, "We what? We've got a what?"
That's right.
Oh my God! And what was the name of it?
The name of the mall?
No, the name of your store.
Oh, the name of my store was Free Market Warrior. This is where we've gone full circle here. The store was called Free Market Warrior, and then since it no longer exists, I am now the Free Market Warrior.
Free Market Warrior takes to the streets. Okay, so but you live in California now.
No, I live in Massachusetts.
Oh, you do live in Massachusetts.
I do.
Oh,
well, you just happen to be in town today, across the street.
Okay. Because you know
what are the odds?
Well, I told Bill, I go, you know, I've never really had this much trouble getting something set up. It's like, I go, this guy's going to think I'm an idiot. It seemed like you texted me, so then I emailed you, and then you emailed me, but I was texting. And so whatever you were on, I was off, and it's like, oh, boy.
Huh. I was an idiot last week. You're an idiot this week.
I know, all the way down to your staying across the street. And I figured that out at midnight. I opted not to call you. I wasn't really sure if you were one of those all-night people. But anyway, wow. Well, I did not know that.
And I travel over the country.
Obviously. Yeah, because what are the odds? We've got somebody, you know, you just happen to be here. Well, I have a niece who goes to school there, so.
Very cool.
So far, so good. She has not lost her compass, but she is in Massachusetts, so you never know. They might make that against the law.
Perhaps. It's a tough place to keep your compass.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be more fun if you were here. Okay, well, so people don't even know how much fun they're going to have, actually, because you've written a couple books. And I see them over there, kind of excited about it, too.
I have. I wrote my first book in 2010, although we keep updating it. This is actually the fifth edition. It's a fifth edition of my first book. About every 6 months, 6 to 9 months, we don't, you
kind of have to freshen up.
Yeah, that's right. You know, new things keep happening. When I first wrote it, no one had heard of Benghazi. You know, no one had heard of Fast and Furious. I've got references to the war against women. You know, things like that. And in fact, the neatest thing for me was that we got our first book review on this, you know, between 4 and 5. So Salon.com said
I'm sure they loved it.
Yeah, yes, they said this is the most twisted piece of conservative propaganda print matter out there.
And propaganda in there.
That's right. So that's now on the cover. I read that and I was calling.
You knew you were doing something right.
I was calling the printers minutes later.
Quick, we've got to change the cover.
So that's now on the cover. And then
it's called The New Democrat, just for, like, because we're on radio, you know, we've got people like, what is it? It's The New Democrat, and it's modeled in the fashion of
Dr. Seuss.
It looks like the Cat in the Hat.
That's right. Well, Dr. Seuss, first of all, was a huge socialist.
Yeah, you could kind of tell by the Lorax a little bit.
Well, yeah, we're about to get to the
Lorax. I know, I saw that one.
we're heading there.
Which is kind of my favorite.
Dr. Seuss, he was a member of the Socialist Party. He was involved in left-wing politics from the beginning, from the earliest, even before he got into children's books, he was in left-wing
politics. Which is just horrible, because he was funny and
you know, he's
clever.
He was a very talented guy.
Yes.
But it's part of the humor here, is that we're making fun of Dr. Seuss, and he peppered his children's books with left-wing messages.
Yeah.
And if I may...
Yes, please. I was just going to say, give people a little...
Which makes them no different from any other children's book.
Yeah. Really? Well, that's probably true. In fact, he may have started that trend. This is Dr. Seuss describing his book, The Cat in the Hat. This is what he said about his own book. He said, I'm subversive as hell. I hope I can say that on the radio.
Oh, yeah, we can say crap, too.
Okay. The Cat in the Hat is a revolt against authority, but it's ameliorated by the fact that the cat cleans up everything in the end. It's revolutionary in that it goes as far as Kerensky and then stops. It doesn't go quite so far as Lenin. Okay, this is Seuss. You know,
so Dr. Seuss totally went into this with an agenda.
Yeah, that's right. You look at the Cat in the Hat. And
Dr. Seuss is a commie. Okay. He changed the title of the show.
And in his own account, he's comparing it to Lenin. Okay, So anyhow, so it seemed to me that that Obama was someone else who might be compared to Lenin, and
there you go.
And this turned into a book because, you know, the cat shows up uninvited at this middle class American home. And he wrecks the place. You know, he wrecks everything he touches. And I said, well, that's kind of like Obama, you know? And he's got these two little friends, Thing One and Thing Two,
oh, yeah.
And they became Pelosi and Reed. Okay, I mean, this is like all... I think it was Mark Twain who said some books write themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
This just started writing itself after a while.
And, you know, people were calling them Thing One and Thing Two.
Well, it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
And moreover, the cat's personality is that he never, for a minute, ever doubts himself. The cat is absolutely certain that whatever he does must be a good idea because he's doing it. You know,
striking similarity.
I was like, yeah, I mean, can you imagine Obama ever perceiving that he's the problem? Like, it would never cross his mind in a million years. So it's like the personality is fit. There's the fish. There's a fish who's the one who warns everyone he shouldn't be here when your mother's out. The fish became Glenn Beck. There was a time in the early stages of this when I was going to have the fish be Rush Limbaugh. This moved around, but I thought Glenn Beck is really like the fish.
He was better than like the fish because he was
sort of our time, he was
kind of a regular guy until all of a sudden he started.
That's right. It's the same time frame. They say at the same time all of this happened. I think, you know, historians will look back at this and say, who was the number one, you know, voice in the wilderness from the beginning? And I think it was Beck. So I ended up with a whole history of the Obama. It's got Fast and Furious and Cap and Trade and bailouts and stimuluses, birth certificates. And the history of Obama in perfect rhyme, fully illustrated.
Throw us a few lines. Give us your favorite part. You got to see this book. It's called The New Democrat, and it's by Dr. Truth. Instead of Dr. Seuss,
the line near the beginning, which I've just noticed everyone cracks up when they get to, is I know you are poor and the outlook's not sunny, but we can have fun with other people's money. So that's one that pretty much always gets a laugh. I'll tell you, in the fifth edition, one of my favorite new lines in the fifth edition is this is you know, going back to the election period. He said, they may claim that taxes and spending need trimming, but we'll say that they're racists fighting a war against women. So
for all those of you that just realized that you knew Dr. Seuss was a little off, but now that you know he's a communist and you can't enjoy his books anymore, you still can. They've been rewritten.
I think you're
is he still alive?
No, he died back in the 90s.
Okay. I never know who's alive and who's not, unless you're here. So then I know.
I'm still alive.
Yeah, good thing.
So anyhow, it's, you know, it's amusing. It's something that is really, you know, people ask me all the time, and it's probably the question that annoys me the most, just because I hear it too much, is it a children's book? And it's not really a children's book. It's an adult book. It's just disguised as a children's book. It's meant to look like a children's book, but this is political humor.
Well, bottom line is it's a book that we all grew up with. Those of us who are grown ups.
Oh, sure, but I'm talking about my book.
Right, no, that's what I'm saying. Your book is a book for those of us who were kids reading Dr. Seuss kids.
That's right.
So we remember that well.
And I know people who read it to their kids.
Really?
You could read this to your kids.
Your 8-year-old is probably not going to get the Benghazi humor.
Right. You know, but if you read it in a funny voice,
it rhymes. It's got pictures. It's there's certain things I feel really good about in what I've done here. And one is I seem to have kind of cracked through the glass ceiling between adult books and children's books. That say if I bring this to an event, and I bring this to events all the time, conservative events, the kids will see it and pick it up and start reading it. I can't tell you how many times I've seen the 10-year-old reading it to his 5-year-old sister.
So you are the new Dr. Seuss.
Because the parents are and I suspect they're not getting, half of it because it's very much, adult political humor. But it works. See, the grown-ups like it too. That's the first glass ceiling I've cracked. The second one is that most Americans, and this is probably, unfortunate, but it's probably true, most Americans don't read books. I mean, books are becoming passé, and the number of people who are serious book readers is sadly pretty small.
Yeah, I think the number that people buy a lot of books, but it's something like
50% of them are never read.
It's like 3% of the books that are bought are actually read. It's really low.
Well, this one is read.
Oh, yeah, I can see why. Yeah.
It's a book, for people who don't read books. So that's like the second great accomplishment that I think I have here is that it's so quick and funny and straightforward and yet profound at the same time. So people who will never actually read a book that you give them will read this one. All the way through.
Yeah.
It's 55 pages, and it's like perfectly tailored to the modern American attention span.
That is nice. And you were tossed out of the mall when? Back in 2009?
That was in 2009, right? And I wrote this originally in 2010, although it's been updated to deal with more recent events.
Nice. And the cover's really funny. It's a kind of a Cat in the Hat, a little bit, with sort of an Obama face, and I don't know. How would you describe the hat?
Well, it's a Soviet style, fur Russian cap.
Yeah, do they have a name? No, they're kind of those little round things.
They probably do. There's probably some Russian.
And it has a nice little red star on it.
But it's
hammer and sickle.
Obviously we had to have some kind of a hat just to make this all. We wanted to make everything fit. I'll tell you one more secret about this is I tried to include things that people would read this 3 or 4 times before they'd notice. I wanted to have this be a book that the second, third, fourth time you went back to it, you'd pick up on stuff you missed the first time. And we do this a lot of, in the drawings, there's a lot of subtle humor that the first time through you're not going to get. So I'll give you an example because you're talking about the cover. You tell me if you even noticed this. In the original book, there's a seal that says I can read it all by myself. That was kind of the slogan.
Yeah.
Okay, I can read it all myself. And so we took that and we did one thing. You see, the whole point of parody is you take what's there and then you make it funny. And we added teleprompters. Okay. So
it says it's in the little circle. I could read it all by myself, but he's standing there and he has a teleprompter on each side in the little circle.
That's right.
So I can't really tell that on the computer, but real life.
So it's one of those things. Like the fifth time you pick it up, people realize, that's funny. It completely changes the meaning of the thing, and that's the art of parody. We tried to take everything in the original, and not retain it in its original form, but tweak it so that it became funny.
Sure.
Which is what parody is all about.
Who did all the illustrating?
A friend of mine.
Nice.
So were you guys
sitting around, having a few beers, and it was like, hey, I got this great idea?
Yeah. I mean, if you want the literal story, he was a friend of mine. He was giving me a ride to the airport. And he had this idea that he wanted to do something with green eggs and ham, only make it about Obama. This was just something that was popping in his head. And he said, he was going to be something like, I do not like Barack Hussein, he gives me tremors in my brain or something like that. It was some little, you know, kind of thing. Right. And I said, it's the wrong book because, you know, Green Eggs and Ham is about trying, something new which you haven't tried before.
Sure.
And that doesn't quite fit. And I said, the right book would be The Cat in the Hat. Because the whole point is The Cat in the Hat is insanely overconfident. The cat in the hat, is absolutely certain that he must be right about everything because he was just born that way. And I was like, that's the character that fits Obama. And he said, thing one and thing two. And I was like, Pelosi and Reid. And there was about, at this point, we'd gotten to the airport. I was flying out of town, and we kind of sat there and stared at each other for 30 seconds. And he said, do you think it would work? And I said, I think it would sell a million copies.
You're like, we're so doing it.
And I was halfway through the first draft by the time I landed. Say I was on the plane, furiously scribbling away the rough draft. Obviously, there was months of polishing it and months of getting the illustrations to match the we weren't done. But yeah, it was from that point that I realized this was something that, and moreover, that There was potential beyond that. I mean, when you're ready, we'll talk about my second book. I'm working on my third book already.
Oh, yeah.
It's not done yet. It's in progress. And the idea of making humorous books that teach conservative morality stories in a very funny, straightforward way, that this has some real potential. I think one of the problems with our society is that the left tends to dominate humor. And, if you look at it, whether it's Jon Stewart or Saturday Night Live,
there's
the things that are humorous are 9 out of 10 times specifically leftist. And it's curious because, frankly, the left is not very funny.
No, that's true. Conservatives tend to be a little more hard. Maybe it's because we're a little hard-hitting and they get irritated.
Well, I think...
They call us snarky.
No, they call you snarky, but...
Hey, I was roping you all in with me.
You did. Lauren, I mentioned, just so in case people don't know, Lauren will be at the Tea Party meeting tomorrow night. Speaking with the folks, and I mentioned...
In Reading,
and I mentioned that we'll have some of the books there, and apparently we're not going to have enough. On the chat here, one lady wants 28. So if you want one of Lauren's books tomorrow night, get there early.
How much are they anyway?
They're 20. They're on the website, I think they're $24.95. But in person, I usually just make it 20. So.
And they're cute little hardback books. I mean, they look just like the kids' books.
Oh, people, yeah, you could read these to your kid.
They're great.
Yeah, you'll read it.
And again, it's the kind of thing, if you put it on your coffee table, everybody is going to pick it up and read it.
Sure.
The plumber who comes to fix your leak is going to come pick it up and read it.
Yeah.
This is not something that just stays there. It just draws people to it, and that I think makes it a cool kind of gift item.
That is awesome. Okay, so we better take a break. Lauren, tell us how you're supposed to say your last name.
Spivak.
Spivak. All right. I listened to it on the video last night, but there was a plane flying overhead in the video, and it was like, darn it, what did he say? And I kept rewinding it. I didn't want to do your name wrong. It's kind of easy looking, but I figure it's probably spring-loaded with difficulty.
Don't accent either syllable, and you got it.
Just roll right through it. All right. We're coming back, and we'll be talking about The Gorax, which is the next book. So you can probably figure out where we're headed here. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We've got the chat room up and running that we haven't been playing it, but other people have. You can call us at 530-605-4567.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, black fish, blue fish, old fish, new fish. Dr. Seuss says none can prove this, but I know it's what the truth.
Right on target, Bob.
Redfish, bluefish.
All right.
That should have been the name of your store.
When I do my next one.
When you get thrown out of the next mall.
Welcome right, back, sorry. Everybody. We're speaking with Lauren
Spivak.
Spivak. I'm going to get that.
You know, we went all over the spring break.
I know.
We did. 2 minutes of Ukrainian? No.
Yes.
Ukrainian.
It's the Olympics, so now all of a sudden all those countries are all really familiar.
We spend the break with a two-minute discussion of how to pronounce my name.
Then it was,
we come back.
Mind lock.
And it was
wait
just
a minute.
Like the,
I know this part.
It was like the Olympics. Bill just like went off the jump and then crumbled at the bottom.
I did.
He didn't stick the landing.
I didn't stick the landing.
If you don't stick the landing, you can't get the goal.
See, he was fine until we made him start thinking about it.
Exactly. He tried the quad right out of the thing.
The Ukrainian
and
judge just
his
gave
little
me a one.
Tight pants got all bunched up, and that was the end of that. How many more metaphors can we mix?
I don't know. This is going to be an interesting morning. Well,
oh,
welcome back, everybody.
Goodness.
And we're going to talk about the Gorax.
Ah, yes.
This was Lauren's second book?
That's right. Just came out this past summer.
There you are. You're back again. You were turned down. Somehow Bob turned you down.
No, I just didn't have it turned up enough.
Okay, so the Gorax, and it's the illustrations are great. Your friend that does the illustrating is really good.
Thank you.
And so it says the anti-environmentalist parody, or an anti-environmentalist parody. Did Salon rank this one too? Did they give you a little review?
Not yet, but I sent them a copy. I sent
the guy, that was so nice of you.
The guy who wrote the original review for Salon.com, I actually looked him up. I found his address. He lives in Northern California.
He does?
He does.
The real Northern California fake Northern California, like Monterey or something?
Frisco.
Yeah. That doesn't count. That's middle and...
Gotcha. Well, anyhow,
he's got all sorts of other problems.
I thanked him for his first review, and I sent him a copy, and I said, you know, if you have any thoughts on this, we would love to have you write another review.
Because what was the review on the first one? The first book is The New Democrat.
Well, that's
written
one where
like the cat in the hat.
He said it was the most twisted piece of conservative propaganda print matter out there. So anyhow, if he had the inclination to toss off some bon mots like that, I would love to put it on the cover of my second book. So
maybe that's why he didn't comment on it. He didn't want to add to the mayhem.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, there's a certain place where, you know, opposites attract, you know, and his audience, you know, wants to hear him, you know, bashing me.
Oh, sure.
And my audience wants to know that he's bashed me. You know, there's all, you know, we have a kind of a mutually beneficial relationship out of this. And, you know, I've got no problem with it. Again, the original book, The Lorax, which I'm of course parodying, at least in its modern versions, has a seal on the cover that says this was made out of 100% recycled paper, right? That, you know, fits their thing. So mine says this book is made from a 500-year-old tree cut from an old growth forest. It landed on a squirrel.
Is that what's in the little square box?
That's exactly what's in the little square box.
Oh, I can't read it.
I brought two copies, so you could have one and I could have one.
Oh, nice.
This is absolutely brilliant parody.
I know, it's super fun.
I love stuff like
and
this.
And the guy that's the Gorax, okay, so yeah, go on about...
Okay, Dr. Seuss's original book, okay, was The Lorax, and it's his, you know, I told you he went from one left-wing message to another, and... and this was his journey into environmental wackoism, okay, with this evil capitalist called the Onceler, who cuts down trees and makes consumer goods. And we learned that's bad.
Yes, very bad.
And the whole point is that he drives the trees to extinction. And so he goes out of business because there's no more trees. He's killed them all off. And I remember reading this to my kids. And I was like, does that make sense to you? do you think that capitalists destroy species that their livelihood depends on? You know, that would be like telling me that Colonel Sanders is going to drive the chicken to extinction. I mean, that's the logic of that.
Yeah.
That Colonel Sanders is just going to get out of control, and he's going to drive the chicken to extinction. I'm like, you know,
he's going to get out of control.
It seems to me the exact opposite is true, that Colonel Sanders cares more about the survival of the chicken species than probably anybody else on Earth, and he cares more than the chickens do. Okay? As long as Colonel Sanders is there, there's going to be more chickens, because this is his whole business. And that this was a book that desperately needed to be parodied. It teaches exactly the wrong lessons about the way the world works and the way capitalism works. So my version is called The Gorax because it has Al Gore as the Lorax character.
And every time you see the Lorax character, he's carrying one of Al Gore's books.
That's right. And he also, you will notice as the book goes on, he gets richer and richer and richer. You know, he starts off, you know, he's like in a limo and then he's got his private plane, you know, and everyone else getting poorer and poorer and poorer.
Is it a coincidence he has a huge mustache like Stalin?
Well, it's our effort was to combine, you know, just as we did in the first book.
Because the Lorax did have a mustache.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So we're making him a, you know, the Gorax is a combination too. The formula, not that I want to give away my secret formulas here, but the formula is that you know, is that we're taking the concept, which is environmentalism, plus the original parodied book, which is The Lorax, and then we're bringing in this public figure, in this case Al Gore, and just kind of combining it all together. So it's about Al Gore, but it's really about how environmentalism is evil and destructive, which is something that I think desperately needs to be said. I think it's hardly going to be a surprise to your audience that the Republicans have been falling down on the job, you know, for, right, the last, 20, 30 years or so. And one of the things that we tend to do, sadly, is allow things like environmentalism to be accepted as, that's not really political, that's just, we care about the earth, that's just a neutral thing. It's like, how could you not, care about the earth? You know, everyone's an environmentalist. And it's really not true. Environmentalism is evil and destructive. It's anti-human, and it's anti-prosperity. It really,
big time anti-prosperity.
It really, really is hurting people. And somebody's got to say, this is bad. This is not just some neutral, non-political thing, like, being against drunk driving or, being in favor of, children and puppies. This is an evil, destructive force in our economy, in our society. And so I'm treating this in a funny way, but it's a serious point, which is that the environmentalists are going to destroy us all if we don't get a hold on it, and the fact that they're hypocrites, that's certainly part and parcel of what we're addressing. Also,
one of the things that came up in the chat room was, can you do a book about the introduction of the wolves, as detrimental as that is to our economy and our way of life in the North State?
It's all over the country.
It's all over the country. I mean, that'd be a hot book.
Yeah,
too.
What developed nation feels the need to reintroduce a apex predator?
Yeah,
wolves will make everything better. That'll be great.
Yeah,
actually, I like the part about who are you? I said in confused disbelief, not knowing if he was serious or comic relief. I'm the Gorax. I speak for the mice, and I also the lice who live on the mice. For the mice and the lice and the fleas cannot speak, and I have a government grant to stand up for the weak. You killed this small rodent with reckless malice and intent, and I'm here to see that you quickly repent. Moreover, parasites have been made homeless by you, and now they wander about without a clue what to do, for you see, to a louse, that mouse was a house.
There's a couple favorite lines, and that's one of mine, and that's one of them.
I'm like flipping through the book, I'm all,
Yeah, this book is a must-have.
The mice line.
Hilarious.
Hey, but you know what? So that I don't, mangle it. Do the last page. That's like a great, because I was like, okay, how does this tale end?
Well, yeah,
I didn't want to cheat, but I did flip to the end really fast.
I tried to do a couple things. It ends on a fairly serious note. I try.
Yeah.
At the end of both of these books is to be more serious than funny, and I also try to end on a question, which I think is both fitting in terms of the original, and it's also. excuse me. It's also, accurately reflects the situation that we're in. Here, I'm going to go a slightly farther back because this is just where I like to start this. Then I took a few stones.
Yeah.
Let me just set this up. This is after the environmentalists have won. Everybody's out of business. Everybody's unemployed. The economy is completely shut down.
There's trash everywhere.
The only thing, basically the entire country has turned into one big Detroit. And the only thing that's still functioning is the Fed, which keeps printing money. Okay, and so in this post-environmentalist apocalypse, he says, then I took a few stones from my factory lot, and I spelled out a word that's worth more than I've got, a word that means everything to one who is lost, because freedom is worth it, whatever the cost. And now that you're here, it's all plain to see that freedom itself just isn't free. Unless people like you are willing to fight to bring back our freedoms, it'll never be right. So catch, calls the one percentler. He lets something fall. It's the Constitution, the last copy of all. You're in charge of our heritage. Don't let us down. Teach your friends and your children. Spread it around. Stand up for your freedom against socialist schemers, environmentalist wackos, and utopian dreamers. Don't let crackpot economists and left-wing politicians get in the way of your most vital mission. If we can pry our country from these political hacks, maybe our prosperity and all will come back. Thank you.
That's great.
That's awesome.
They should put these in the library at all the public schools. Or wouldn't that create an uproar?
Actually, you know what we should do? We should get copies to all of our folks that like to read fun things, and we should infiltrate the children's reading hour at the library.
There you go.
I'm sure they'd go for that. We already had a little court case that involved handing out constitutions at the library. So I'm thinking during, the little kids' reading hour, this is going to be super popular. We're going to need multiple copies of this, by the way. So you're going to be able to get those for the people that are listening to this on the right day, which would be Sunday the 16th. If you're listening to this after the fact, sorry. Go online, and there are links there to where the books can be found.
It's ObamaParody.com is the website.
Thank you very much. I was just flashing to that because I knew there was a snappy name. And actually, on ObamaParody.com, you can see like 3 minutes of The New Democrat being read, and the pages are flipped, and you can see the illustrations and stuff. So if you're not sure you need a copy, that ought to help you
out. That'll remove all doubt.
Yes, yes.
Well, I think Sally's going to be taking orders tomorrow night. So
yeah, we're doing that.
If you're one of those people who has to see what's in it.
yeah, just in case. Yeah, we got to pass it so we can. Oh, no, you got to buy it so you can see what's
you
in it. Isn't
buy
that right?
It.
Isn't, was that thing one or thing two that said that?
That is thing one, who is Pelosi.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure who got to be which one. All those people whose parents didn't read them stories when they were kids, I'm really sorry. You better run out and get Dr. Seuss so you can get up to speed with the new version. All righty, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll probably talk about some economic stuff.
Ooh, that would be fun.
In the next hour or so, hang with us. We'll get past the parody part. Nah, I don't know. We might not get past the parody part.
I like Dr. Truth.
I do, too. So, you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And though my lack of education hasn't hurt me none, read the writing on the wall. Cold or cold, give us those nights, bright colors, give us the greens of summers, makes you think all.
all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Yeah, we need more parking lots. We are speaking to Dr. Truth, Lawrence Spivak, and his latest book, The Gorax. Some great stuff in that about environmentalism. It's a hilarious book. You're going to have, if you see it, you're going to have a copy of it.
I particularly like the bumper sticker that says, I am the 99% on the back of the Gorax's limousine. That's totally it, too. That's completely what they do. Ha.
Try to have subtle.
That's very subtle. It's an orange bumper sticker on a white limousine.
Well, again, the point is the things that you pick up the second time around. It's, you'll notice that he's always forever running down these deer in his various means of transportation.
Yeah, I noticed that. The deer were all fleeing. I like it. You got the hair and the lips just right and that scary nose.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And you are, I don't know if I should mention this, but you're working on another book right now.
I am. My third one is going to be about Hillary Clinton.
Can't wait.
And more broadly, I mean, it's going to focus on Hillary, but more broadly about where America is today. I mean, that's probably the best way I could put it. It's a critique of the Clintons and their role and what's happened to America.
And are you sticking with the Dr. Seuss theme?
It's going to be essentially this kind of format. I can't get more specific than that.
Oh,
because
it's in the lab.
It's, well,
top secret.
Well,
white coats.
We usually
gloves.
When it actually goes to print.
Yeah.
You know, there's a point where like I'll start telling people and taking pre-orders, but the exact format I'm not at liberty to share. But it's going to be very. I mean, clearly the third volume of the series, but the lead character is going to be Hillary, and it's going to be, you know, Hillary, unlike Obama, you know, was not president yet, so it can't be a history, you know, so much as a critique of where America is and what the Clintons really stand for.
I can't wait.
Wow.
I can't wait.
But in a funny way.
Of course. In a funny way.
Of course.
And, okay, so what have, as you go across the country, have you gotten quite a bit of pushback? Like from the environmental community and from all these different, you know...
No, I really don't connect with them very much. I mean, my role...
I would think they send you emails, though, don't they? Yeah. Special emails?
I read you the review from Salon.com. That's the only case I can think of in recent years where there's really been an interaction. I mean, my job, my self-professed job, is to help educate conservatives about conservative values and about free market economics. You know, I'm not in a battle with the left directly. I'm just trying to arm conservatives mm-hmm. in the battle that they're fighting. I mean,
that's awesome because it's a much less then you can do what you're good at and you're not all tangled up in.
Yeah, I mean,
just was curious.
This is a big, wide world. There's many different things to be done, and no one is going to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my niche is really to help conservatives understand, particularly economic issues, about the argument. So I'm not so much in the business of changing people's minds, although eventually I'd like to, but I'm in the business of helping people who are already on our side understand our side better. Okay, so I'm kind of like training the troops who go off into battle.
Right. Now, I assume it hasn't gone on the bestseller list, but has it taken off? Have you done well?
Oh yeah, it's been very well received.
Okay.
It's to the extent that it's a bestseller, it may be a stealth bestseller because
right.
there's no. There's no New York Times, you know, bestseller list has absolutely no idea this book exists. Okay, this is not in stores.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I first wrote this, a couple more than one friend of mine sent me a list of how few books actually sell a significant number.
Right.
And I've clearly beaten the odds already.
Well,
nice.
I'm wondering if they would even want to admit that the book was out there.
Probably not, because that would mean people might look it up and buy it.
Yeah.
So that's cool. You can find all the info about that, actually, on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Lauren will be with us at the Tea Party Monday night at 6 o'clock at Destiny Fellowship Church. And we have another hour.
We're going to talk about some economics next hour.
Shift
gears.
Not a lot, though. We'll probably still do a little rhyming. You're listening to We the People Radio.
And we will be back.
And you're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
Talking to Dr. Truth. And we're going to shift gears.
Lauren Spivak. The website for the first hour that we pretty much discussed was ObamaParody.com. And he's got a couple of books modeled after the Dr. Seuss books we remember as kids, except Dr. Seuss was a socialist, which is so unfortunate.
All that stuff is on the We the People Radio website.
Correcto.
Correct? Yeah.
The New Democrat was the one book modeled after the Cat in the Hat, and then the Gorax, which obviously speaks for itself. And those will be available tomorrow at the Reading Tea Party, 6 o'clock,
yes.
Destiny Fellowship Church.
If you have kids in school, you need to buy a copy of that book and get it to them.
We were just making a list. It's like, oh, we've got to send a couple to Texas. We need to send one here. Yeah, so bring books.
I had a lady once in South Carolina who came up to me and said, your book almost got me fired.
Really?
She turned out she was a public school teacher.
No.
And had brought it to school. And I don't know the whole story, but apparently the unions were involved.
I was going to say, the teachers' union probably loved
those
books.
The unions were involved.
There was a major labor issue that was sparked over the presence of my book in her school.
Oh, sorry about that.
I bet she liked it anyway. We have multimedia man in here who says, write a book called Green Fibs and Libs.
Green Fibs and Libs.
So there you go. There's a little seedling for you.
I was actually thinking about that bumper tune that you played a little while ago, and the line, they took all the jobs and put them in the job museum, was rolling
yes.
through my head. There's a parody in the makings there.
Yes, it's crying. It's crying for more.
Some songs beg to be made fun of.
Oh, they give you so much material to work with. How can you miss?
The bad part is it's all true.
It is.
I mean, it'd be nice if we were making fun of something and we had to really stretch and people weren't sure what we were talking about.
Yeah, it's a sad laugh.
Even people with no sense of humor know what we're saying.
Lauren, I'm curious if you come across anyone on the left side of the political spectrum who finds this stuff amusing? I mean, that doesn't take themselves too seriously?
I have. If you want a quick story, I used to, and I pretty much moved away from this, I used to put some effort into getting these into local bookstores. You know, not so much the chains, but like local mom and pop, you know, because I travel the country anyhow. And I was in somewhere in Tennessee, and there was a local store, and I came in and I showed it to the lady. She said, oh, that's so cute, that's so nice. And I said, yeah, maybe you'd like to sell it in your store and I could get you some. And she started reading it, and I saw the moment that the blood rushed out of her face. I don't think I've ever actually seen someone change color, and her face went completely white, and she put the book down and stared at me, and she said, you need to know I'm a big supporter of Mr. Obama. And I said, I could tell the minute the blood rushed out of your face that you were. And I said, but you know, you're running a bookstore here. I bet half of your customers are conservatives. You know, what do you only sell? You only sell books that you personally agree with, or are you trying to make money? And she said, well, that's a point. She said, I do have a lot of conservative customers. I said, all right, so you will make money by offering this to both of them. Is that what you're in business for? She said, you make fair point. She said, I forgot how many. She said, I'll take X number of them, and we'll try it out. And I said, that's fine. And I gave her my information and whatever, and I wished her a pleasant day. My phone rang at 6 a.m. the following morning.
They're all gone.
And she was there, and she said, I finished reading your book. It's absolutely amazing. I disagree with every single point you make, but it is so well done, it's incredible. And then she said, I wish you were on our side.
And actually, that's a great compliment.
Yeah, I realized that was probably the greatest compliment I was ever going to get.
Yeah.
You know, nothing you could say compliments the book as much as that.
Yeah, sure.
So there we go. That's
someone who goes, damn, too bad they're not one of ours.
Did you find out what her sales were? Did she do well with it?
She sold them all and ordered more. I know that. Mm. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were.
That's funny. That's actually kind of great. Okay, so switch to the economic part.
Sure, which is my major occupation.
I know you said normally you talk about the economics the whole time and you talk about the books for 3 seconds, and we just did like a whole hour on the books, which really is good, actually. I'm glad we did.
Me too.
All right, so what do you usually tell people?
Well, my free market warrior persona is that I talk to conservative groups, Republican groups, Tea Party groups all over the country about free market economics. And the basic point is to help people understand that the classical economists, Austrian school and classical economists, pretty much addressed all of the issues that we're facing today. This is not new stuff that no one ever thought mm-hmm. about before. This is all there. We just don't learn about it. Part of the left-wing agenda is to create this kind of historical amnesia where it's as if we never faced this stuff before.
it's the first time.
Yeah, these problems never happened. There's some new situation that we've got to figure out how to deal with, and if anything, it couldn't be farther from the truth. And the fact is, the classical economists explained all of this. So I try to help people understand the economics behind the policies. That is to say, most conservatives have a general sense that taxing people, too much is a bad idea, and that government stimuluses, where the government spends money to fix the economy, is probably doesn't work, and that sort of thing. But I try to help people understand the economic logic behind it. If anything, the case is much stronger than your average conservative even understands, because his liberal neighbors say, well, you're just greedy. Because if you were a generous person, you would want to pay more taxes. Because taxes are what we do together. Yes. That's what the government,
we all come together and
make the world a better place, and you don't want to participate. It's because you're a selfish person. And what I try to help people understand is the absolute absurdity of that. That taxes are hugely destructive to society and prosperity. That the basic function of our government is to make everybody poorer. And that's pretty much what government does, is it makes everyone poorer, and it particularly makes poor people poorer.
We're looking at that right now. The
reason, the things that our government does, particularly under the current administration, but even before that, accentuate the gap between the rich and the poor, because they make poor people poorer. And so Obama complains about the biggest problem in America today is the gap between the rich and poor, and his policies are making it worse. I mean, this is a great trick if you can play it, okay? He has policies which increase the gap between rich and poor, and then his point is that you have to give him, he has to do more stuff because that's the biggest problem, but the stuff he's doing is increasing the problem. I mean, this is just,
And they say it with a straight face.
They do, and they've managed to get themselves in a situation where they make people worse off, and then they win elections because they've made people worse off.
That's the part I just don't get.
Well, it has its logic. You see, now that you're poor, you better vote for the Democrats.
Right.
Because they're the party of the poor. So, if you're poorer than you were before, then you need the Democrats even more because now you're even poorer. Okay? And they do that, and part of the problem is that the Republicans don't understand economics well enough. I give a seminar, which I call Economic Literacy. Where
that would be handy.
When I speak to your group tomorrow, I'm going to offer it to you guys.
Nice.
It's a two-night program where we learn economics from one end to the other, and your average Republican office holder is essentially economically illiterate. They don't get it, and so they don't make the correct points about this. You see Republicans, defending, it's good that the gap between the rich and the poor. Well, yeah. Under different circumstances, it might be good or it might be bad, but it's Obama's policies that are causing it. All of these things, regulation of big business is good for big business. It's bad for small business. The actions of the government always land on the new upstart trying to break in, whereas the companies that are already there, that are already well-established, first of all, they're already connected to the government. The regulations get tailored to the needs of the powerful incumbents that are already in the industry, and their major objective is to drive away competitors, which in turn drives up prices, right, makes consumers poorer, and makes the people who are already there to begin with richer. The Democrats, they don't even think about this anymore, the Democrats do the obvious thing for them, and that is they get into bed with the rich, powerful incumbents in the industry. It's like Obamacare. He's got this routine, but just look how he does this. Obamacare is 100% in bed with the health insurance industry as it is today.
But then they tout how bad big industry and big business.
That's right, that's right. The deal that Obama has with the healthcare industry is, I am going to give you the greatest piece of legislation you could ever have dreamt of, okay? This is a law that's going to force people to buy your product. Just think, whatever business you might be in, imagine the president came along, I'm going to make a law that says people have to buy your product. I'm going to punish them legally for not buying your. What do you think? Is that the greatest law ever for your business? And then, if you still can't make money, I'll have the government bail you out. So I'm going to force people to buy your product and guarantee.
And make sure you can't lose.
And make sure you can't
lose. And you're really not going to like it.
Okay, but the one deal is, the only thing you've got to do for me is, every time I get in trouble politically, I'm going to demonize you guys. I'm going to say, the Republicans are going to give you too much power, that I'm really protecting everyone again. But you and I will really know that this is totally in your interest. That's the deal. And he pulls this off time and time again, that is the Republicans who are in bed with the insurance companies, and the exact opposite is true. Well, I'm not going to speak for Republicans, but as a free market capitalist, I know that the biggest problem with healthcare in America is that there is too much insurance. People need to start paying their own healthcare bills, and we need to have less insurance. Insurance makes sense when you're protecting against rare and expensive, unplanned catastrophes. When you start paying for people's birth control, that's not insurance.
It's not health care either.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't fit in this at all. And people need to pay for stuff like this themselves. So the regime that I would propose would greatly diminish the size and scope and power of the American health insurance industry, because the regime I would impose is freedom. And if you stop – and it's too complex to explain in this segment – but if you stop and look at the actual effect of government regulation, it's to increase the power of the insurance industry. And if you had a free market system, it would actually decrease their power.
Yeah, true, because people could come in, go out,
Well, people would pay their own bills.
Correct.
It's just like your house insurance, pays if your house burns down. It doesn't pay for a burned-out light bulb.
You wait.
Because that,
Now we all have the curly light bulbs and they catch on fire all the time. So, you know, actually, you might have stumbled on something.
But it makes no economic sense.
No, true.
To cover things like that with insurance, because insurance is the most expensive way to pay for anything.
Well, especially when you take away the principle of insurance where you have an actual actuarial table. You know, you use actuarials to come up with the rate. But instead, you just go, you got to cover everybody for everything, and that's the parameter. Well, what the heck? If you're an insurance company, how do you do that?
And how do
you even come up with a rate?
But they'll do it because they can't lose money.
Well, it's got to be a high, you know, at the end of the day, even if you wanted to keep costs down and you weren't counting on the bailout and all that, you can't with those parameters.
Yeah, you
just can't do it.
The broad mistake is to conflate big business with capitalism.
Yeah.
Most big businesses don't want capitalism.
No.
They don't want freedom. They want the government.
They don't want competition.
That's right. They want the government to guarantee their, because, you know, competing is just too hard.
Well, that's why we have laws about monopolies and that sort of thing, because we've had issues with that in the past. All right, we need to take a quick 2-minute break. Are we still doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You were touching a different computer, so I thought maybe you changed your mind and we were going to yammer on. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes.
Sharing.
It's all about sharing.
It's all about sharing.
It's all about sharing. And someone on the chat room just posted a link to an article. The head of Obama's Job Council is quoted as saying, state-run communism actually works. That's awesome. Yeah.
Because there are so many examples of that in history.
Exactly. Yeah, he was at the end. His quote is, look, I think it's good for China. To a certain extent, 11 to 12% is unsustainable. That's the growth rate, because they're down at like 8%. You end up getting too much stimulus or a misallocation of resources. Oh, that's the part where my blood boils. They are much better off working in a more consumer-based economy, less dependent on exports, driving technology and innovation harder. Really, the one thing that actually works, state-run communism may not be your cup of tea, but their government works. And Lauren said,
Auschwitz worked.
Exactly.
The question is, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, what kind of work are you looking at?
Yeah.
Yowza.
I almost had to stop watching the Olympics when they kept touting how wonderful, the wonderful history of Russia and how they were just misunderstood. And it's like, are you kidding me? They killed millions of their people to get where they are today, and they're still screwed up.
And the fifth snowflake didn't open, but
somebody died over that, I'm sure.
And the water is yellow.
Yeah, and the doors are made out of cardboard.
I actually ran into a great Stalin quote, which I'm going to be using in one of my projects. Stalin apparently said, ideas are more powerful than guns. We wouldn't let our enemies have guns, so why should we let them have ideas? I thought that was a very quotable quote.
Well, the media is starting to turn on Russia now because, you know, some of them couldn't get toilet paper, and that they are barbarians over there because they don't have enough toilet paper to go around.
They don't have good toilet paper?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're ready to leave.
And the fact that apparently the police can hold you for up to 14 days on suspicion of being gay.
Boy, they better not watch figure skating.
Is one of those, is one of those things that's not guaranteed to make you a lot of friends.
So if you skip
in
the Olympic Village, no skipping.
Don't be caught with any mascara in your pocket. You're going down.
What if you're carrying? What if you're from Europe and you're carrying one of those man purses? 14 days.
Don't do. Yeah.
Hard time. Actually, well, you won't be in the snow because there doesn't seem to be any snow there. I don't know what the heck's going on. It looks like summer over there.
Oh, sorry.
What are you guys doing playing footsie over there? 14 days. That's it. You're down.
we're hauling you in.
What's wrong with us?
I think we just came up with a new song parody, Arrested for Driving While Gay.
Actually, there was a... Anyway, go on. Go. Pull us back, Lord. Do it.
Would you like to talk about economics?
Yes, there you go. I couldn't remember what we were talking about before.
It was economics or something.
Stupid economics.
I was picking up on what you said about monopolies.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's a similar
way
example.
To focus.
The fact is that the traditional story about monopoly simply does not exist. The idea that evil capitalists will all get together and they'll form a monopoly and government has to protect, is this not what your high school teacher told you?
Yeah, exactly.
The government's got to protect you from this. Well, the fact is, and I've done some research on this, I talk about this at length in my seminar, first of all, it's not true, it never happened. Okay? You cannot maintain a monopoly in a free market because you can, as long as you can't stop other players from coming in, you can't maintain a monopoly. And as Ludwig von Mises, who's one of my favorite economists, points out, the very fact that you could have competition already restrains people who would be monopolists. Let's say if I have the only grocery store in town, can I do anything I want? Can I charge whatever I want for anyone? Well, I can't, because the higher my prices are, the worse my service is, the faster a new competitor is going to show up.
Sure.
The way I keep a competitor out of town is I do a good enough job to keep people reasonably happy. The competitor is going to look for the place where the people are least satisfied in what service they have. So the one mm-hmm. thing you have to do to not have monopolies is allow anybody to enter any industry anytime they want. As long as there is no government preventing people from entering industries, then the whole monopoly thing does not exist. It's really just a socialist lie. But the story gets better, because the fact is, who would stop people from entering industries? And the answer is government. Government does this all the time. My social studies teacher, who told me that the government had to protect us from monopoly, worked for a government-run monopoly in education. This should have been like a tip-off. That something's wrong here. And the fact is, the government does this all the time. They are constantly in the business of preventing competition. So it's illegal to compete with the post office. How can it be that monopoly is bad and that the government makes a law saying it's illegal to compete with the U.S. post office? Why can't I open up Spivak's mail delivery service and just deliver, and people pay me, I deliver their letters? Did you know that's a federal offense? I could go to prison.
I didn't know that.
To prison. Okay, but so which is it? Is monopoly good or is it bad? Okay, and if it has to be stopped, how come the government does? But it goes farther than this. In case after case after case, government uses licensure to prevent people from entering different fields and thus protecting incumbents, making prices go higher and service get worse. So, for instance, in Louisiana, you need a license to sell flowers. Who do you think? What do you think?
Because you might be what? Poisoning people?
With a flower?
Yeah, right. What kind of consumer harm could come from that?
You need a license. In most jurisdictions, you need a license to be a barber to cut people's hair. Why? If I'm willing to pay you to cut my hair, and you're willing to cut my hair, and we agree on the price, who else's business is this?
Well, that licensing thing goes on and on. You need a license to do anything.
That's correct. And the argument that this is somehow protecting people,
it's protecting the consumer.
It was nonsense. It protects the incumbents in the industry. We see this all over the country. In most municipalities, you need a license or a medallion to have a taxi cab. And
that's real tightly controlled.
There's a court battle on this I believe it's Kansas City, Missouri, where they decided that they only needed a certain number of cabs. It's like 3,000 cabs, and that's all you can have in the city. They give out 3,000 licenses, no more than that. Well, guess what? All 3,000 licenses are owned by a couple companies who are the incumbents in the industry. So if you go to Kansas City, Missouri, and you want to open up your own taxi cab business, you cannot, because all 3,000 licenses are owned by the industry incumbents.
But that's not a monopoly.
Of course. and you would have to buy it from them, because they own. Well, you think they're going to sell to you? Who are you kidding? They're much happier to have zero competition.
Isn't it Washington, D.C. is like the only one that still has...
Washington, D.C. has a reputation historically for having a pretty wide open field for taxi cabs, although they're moving away from that.
I was reading a story about that.
I saw an interview with the guy who's the head of the Taxi and Limousine Commission in Washington. And he's fascinated. He was saying, we can't let somebody just come in here and just knock over the apple cart and drive everybody else out of business. Like, of course, if this guy had been running the economy, 100 years ago, we wouldn't have automobiles.
Yeah.
We'd have laws protecting...
We'd have one grocery store for the state.
We'd have laws protecting the horse and buggy industry, saying you can't just come in here and start making automobiles. Okay? This stuff paralyzes economic growth. It damages the consumers, and it's everywhere. In at least a dozen states, you need a license to be an interior decorator. What do you think that's protecting people from? Bad taste?
Bad color swatches.
you're probably
protecting them from wallpaper.
You're going to have orange drapes and a purple carpet.
That's probably why we all had wallpaper growing up on our houses.
I'm from the government. I'm here to protect you from this. The story here is particularly galling because, first of all, in a free market, monopolies do not exist. And again, we have limited time, but given enough time, I can explain this. It's impossible, and it's never happened. And instead, what with the exact same government is in the business of creating monopolies artificially and protecting them and thus damaging the consumers and also damaging innovation. It's an economic horror story that has greatly decreased our prosperity, and it's part of what's slowing down our economy today. Is the lack overregulation which prevents competition, which is making us all poorer.
Oh, and you see it on every level. You see it at the federal level, the state level, and even the county level, the city level. I mean, try to open a business in the city of Reading, and you have to do the same traffic study that's been done 15 times for the same piece of property every time a new business moves in. It's crazy the amount of money you got to spend.
And you look at the cost of those fees and permits.
And you're talking about the growth rate in China. We used to grow like that. We had amazing economic growth from the end of the Civil War up until through the 1920s. And because we had minimal government and minimal regulation and a general sense that people ought to be free to do whatever they want in business. And if your customers like it, then you succeed. If they don't, you fail. And we had amazing economic growth. China has had amazing economic growth because they have decreased their level of government. I understand China is not democratic, but we frequently confuse, and we shouldn't, economic freedom from political freedom. China has no political freedom, but they do have a significant measure of economic freedom. And they've gone from having no economic freedom in the 1970s and early 80s to having more economic freedom than we do today. And frankly, economic freedom is more valuable than political freedom. People think as long as you can vote, then you're all set. No, you're not.
Not really.
No, you're not.
You have to be able to support yourself. You have to be able to go out and
economic freedom is a million times more valuable than political freedom. In fact, the only reason I really care about political freedom, the only reason I care whether I have political freedom is that if I don't have political freedom, they'll take away my economic freedom.
Exactly. Yeah. That's,
yeah. If I could,
they'll make the new rules to keep you from having
that's
economic
right.
freedom.
If I could be guaranteed complete economic freedom, that means I can open any business anytime I want, no licensure, no government interference at all, I would quickly lose interest in who sat in the White House.
Which is, I think, what happened.
Okay.
That's how we got here.
Yeah.
We were all working, right? We were all working, everybody's making money, everybody was kind of running their life, and then it was like, wait a minute, how did we get these, who are these people?
Well, they stepped in and wanted to start making money.
They've been
on
setting
the
it up for
others.
A long time.
Well, that's,
they built
that,
a little.
That's certainly true.
It's kind of like that old movie, Support Your Local Sheriff, where Bruce Dern builds the jail. James Garner tricks him into building his own jail. He just, he's standing right in there, and he's like, how'd they build the jail? Well, I did it, Dad. The leader of the gang. He's like, why didn't you just walk out?
Anyone else saw the movie.
Oh, no, everyone saw the movie. Everyone saw the movie.
That's you're right. You're spot on, though. I mean, if the government has the ability to change the rules, then we have to have the political freedom to go along with the economic freedom.
And throughout history, there have been numerous examples where there was economic freedom without political freedom. The Roman Empire essentially had economic freedom. You could do what you want. You could run your own business. No one in Rome really cared how you were running your business or what the environmental impact of your, nobody cared about that. And so they had a good measure of prosperity, at least in the early stages, even though there was zero political freedom, but most people don't really care.
But they don't have the ability to control people if they can't control their economic freedom. They have to be able to control that, to control the people.
The modern version of totalitarianism, which gets into the economic realm, is way more dangerous than what, for instance, the ancient Roman Empire had.
And on that note, you can ponder that for 2 minutes.
Can we take Frank before we go to the break?
Oh, yes, we can do that, too.
Frank is on a cell phone in Anderson.
Cell phone in Anderson.
Go ahead, Frank. This is Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, Ayn Rand made this clear 50 or more years ago in some of her writings by referring to this as either or coercive monopoly. In other words, it's possible to have a benevolent monopoly, one that does as the broadcaster there was describing, does the greatest possible good and satisfies all the customers. And there can be a monopoly. It's when the government steps in and places restrictions on the development of the economy or business that then you have coercive monopolies, such as by granting railroads all the rights of way and or some people the right to drill and other people not the right, or some people the right to open up a cab business and others not. So that's something that has been largely forgotten, that she was one of the first to make this clear to the public.
Yeah, and that was back when, in the 40s?
No.
Yeah,
she's writing in the 60s, but that's exactly right, that because you are the only supplier in a particular industry, as long as it's free, there's not a problem, because there's no coercion involved in it. It's worth noting that every case that I've found where the government has prosecuted a company for being a monopoly, Alcoa, the aluminum company of America, was prosecuted in the 60s for being a monopoly. Bell Telephone was prosecuted.
Yeah, that was a big one.
And of course, Standard Oil, which is the famous one. In every single case, the government's argument was that the company was charging too little. Standard Oil was selling oil so cheaply that people couldn't compete. Alcoa was selling aluminum so cheaply that their competitors couldn't compete. And I learned this, and I said, my high school teacher said that monopolies, that the evil capitalists would form a monopoly, and then what would they would raise prices, right? Okay, how come they're not raising prices? How come the government's prosecuting people for charging too little? And what they'll say is, well, then you can't compete with them because they're charging. Who cares? If you can produce aluminum more cheaply,
than anybody else can, then God bless you. You're doing everybody a service.
Have a field day.
Okay? And if someday someone comes up and figures out how to do it more cheaply than you can, then they're going to knock you out of business, and that's fine. But our government, you see, the teachers tell you that they're protecting you against higher prices. Mm. What they're actually protecting you against is lower prices.
Yeah, exactly. We're preventing that part.
Exactly.
Thank you, Frank, for the call, and we'll be back in 2 minutes. You are listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR, 1460 AM. Oh, with an appropriate song.
Always.
Ready?
Here we go.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.
Hey, before I forget, we have a pretty special event coming up on March 8th. It's our annual fundraiser for Conservative Talk Radio. If you like what you're hearing today, help support the cause. We do this once a year, and it's going to start at 4:30 on the 8th of March. We're going to have a dinner gun auction. We're going to have raffles. It's going to be a lot of fun. And check with Aaron.
We're having a dessert auction and a gun auction.
Right.
We're not just dishing out dessert. You're going to bid on it, and so you get free market choice.
That's right. If you see something you like, you can have it.
You can have it.
Yeah.
If you can pay for it.
If you just get together with everybody at your table and pony up the dough.
Yep. And then we all share.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
If you've never had a dessert auction, you're in for a treat.
And with a gun, next time you can shoot your own dessert.
There you go. See, that's the dinner part. We're going to have them provide it, but yeah, we could all.
Yeah, so help support the cause. March 8th at Wind River Casino.
Yep, Conservative Radio for the North State, which encompasses.
And where can you buy tickets?
We the People Radio from 8 to 10, and Sovereign Minds. That's coming on in about 11 minutes, right behind us.
How about a medical marijuana auction? What do you think?
Yeah. Speaking of that, I know that is a bizarre segue. However, did you happen to see the picture on Twitter? It's my Twitter moment. The picture on Twitter of the Girl Scout troop that was selling cookies right in front of the marijuana store. It's kind of like, okay, at first you're like, that is so wrong. And then it's like, actually, that's pretty good marketing.
Yeah, got the munchies
there. But it's really wrong. But it's good marketing.
Pretty well encapsulates America's 2014.
Yeah, it was just so super confusing.
To answer my own question, you can buy tickets for the event at Jones Fort.
I love blowing
go by and see them. You can also buy them from Aaron or Linda.
Yeah, you can get them at North State Consultants. They're 14421 Old Oregon Trail. Number is really easy, 221-0101. Actually, if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, all the information is there on the page. And you can give me a call if you need more choices. My number is 530-515-7135. Bob's telling someone on the phone, I can't hear you, but can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
What are you doing over there?
I heard that. I answer the phone, all I can hear is us in the background and no one else speaking but you.
Oh. I was secretly calling you, not. All right, Lauren.
Somebody's spoofing us.
We've got Ted. It's probably Mark. Is he out there somewhere?
Yeah, he's a troublemaker.
All right, so we have, Horse Creek Mike just commented in the chat room. Thanks, Mike, because I did think about that earlier. Michael Badnarik, the constitutional scholar, he is going to be doing a workshop of
That's
all
right.
places, Wairika.
Next Saturday,
yep. 8 o'clock, 8 in the morning. It's going like 8 to 12, and then I think like 2 to 5, something like that. So it's basically an all-day deal, and it's at the community center in Wairika. If you need more information on that, give me a call, 515-7135, and that will be awesome. I've seen his videos. He's very well-known. I don't actually know where he lives, but I I know he doesn't live in Wairika. So the odds of you seeing him again out here in our area are probably kind of slim. Okay, those are all the announcements. Except for tomorrow night, Lauren's going to be at the tea party, 6 o'clock.
Yeah, be there.
Be there or be square. It'll be
you
super fun.
You are going to want these books, folks. Get there early and get one.
They the economic information will be good. It'll be fun. But
it's going to be a
Yeah, the books are a must-have.
We might even get Lauren to read a few verses for us.
Can you wax poetic for us?
I would be happy to, but what I really want to focus on is understanding that this entire concept of stimulus, the entire idea that the government spends money and that gooses up the economy, is based on a theory which is easily provable as nonsense. This is Keynesian economics that goes back almost 100 years now, and it's the idea that we need people to consume things, not to produce things. That consumption is good, production is bad, government spending
is good. Which is just irrational.
Destruction is good. Wars are good. Weren't you taught in school that World War II was good for the economy?
Solve the economic problems.
That's right, because we destroy things instead of produce things. And that's good for the economy. So we're going to talk about this idea which has infested every inch of our political life. You know, of the last 14 presidents we've had, 13 of them have essentially been Keynesians in that they believed this nonsense about production being bad and that you need government to fix the economy.
Yeah, have a war and fix the economy.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about what nonsense this is and the implications of it. We don't, for instance, need jobs. This is the whole idea that we create jobs. Well, we don't create jobs. That's not what an economy does. We have jobs to create things. We need to produce stuff. And that's why you have to have a job. So a job is something that gets you to a destination. When you start talking about creating jobs, you're already in a world where the government pays people to dig holes in the ground and fill them back in again, so that they've got a job and now they can go buy stuff, which is an economic never land. It's the through the looking glass kind of economics that once you get in there, you're just chasing your own tail. Well, because we've forgotten what the economy really is, and that is it's there to produce things.
Sure. Well, and the part that gripes me is that we talk a lot about jobs, but what about opportunity to create your own business? You know, we're always talking about jobs, that everybody just needs to go, you know, sit in a cube and work for a wage, which just destroys our whole innovation, our free market idea.
Sure, and the growth in the economy really comes from the innovation.
Sure.
As opposed to the jobs. So, yeah, so this is, I call it the job myth. The idea that this is something called jobs, it's an end in and of itself. And similarly with money, money is a useful economic tool that helps us to achieve certain economic goals. But money is not the goal. You know, the idea that if the Fed just prints enough money, you know, that everything's going to be fine, is completely missing the point. So we're going to be talking about how most of our economic discussion, the entire discussion, misses the point of what an economy actually does, and that is produce things.
What an idea. And if we don't do that, I mean, ultimately, we wind up like the Soviet Union. We're going to be
poor.
It was, right. I forget what country, a girl we know, she was a high school student, and she went to one of the small countries that's been renamed 17 times.
Okay,
outside the Soviet Union. And she said there were shoe stores there, but they weren't shoe stores for, like, pairs of shoes. There were shoe stores for shoes for the left feet, and then shoe stores for the shoes for the right feet. Okay. So you had to go find a shoe that fit your left.
Are you kidding?
No, remember Ashley told us that? No, she said it's so screwed up, all they do is stand in line for crazy stuff, and that was like the craziest one she saw.
Well, we're back to the point about how government-run communism succeeds. And if you think that the goal is to get everybody a job, then the guy's right. The way to get everybody a job is to have communism. Do you think there's anybody in North Korea who doesn't have a job?
That's the thing.
I guarantee you they have 0.00% unemployment in North Korea. You live in North Korea, you have a job, my friend, and you better be there on time.
You
better be on time.
Because okay. We have another place for you.
And you better have probably better not have a smile on your face.
Or you're heading off to a concentration camp. And they have money. They print money. People in North Korea have money. The government prints the money. They've got pieces of paper. But they're starving because they don't have food.
Well, they have so much money, they even print our money over there, I understand.
As a sideline.
A little side job.
But what we're completely missing, and you could say the same thing about the Soviet Union, you could say the same about Nazi Germany. Okay? But what they don't have is anything called prosperity, because prosperity comes from producing things. It's the stuff we're not producing that makes us poorer. Yeah. And we'll be talking about that all tomorrow night.
Yeah, and we'll do the whole economic thing, because people can have the books in their hands, so we won't have to do so much on the book. They're priceless, though. They really are. I like in your one video you talked about how people, because back in 2010, people were all screaming about the debt. And I thought it was a really good point you made. You said, stop focusing on the debt.
The deficit.
The deficit. Sorry, you were saying that if they focus on that the way it's cured is by raising taxes.
Well, if you say that the problem is the deficit, the problem is there's a gap between what comes in and what goes out. If that's the problem, then one obvious way to solve that is let's just tax more. And I think we're making a serious strategic mistake when we do that. The real point is that government at all levels, but certainly particularly the federal government, is in the business of making people poorer in case after case after case. What does the Department of Energy do? It makes us poorer. Do you think they produce energy at the Department of Energy? They are in the business.
Well, it's like the Department of Education. Do you think they teach anybody anything?
That's right. The Department of Energy is in the business of making sure we have less energy. Okay. Well, what does the Department of Agriculture do? They pay farmers not to grow crops. So the food will cost more. Okay. So why do they do that? Well, this goes back to the Keynesianism, which I'll be talking about tomorrow night. The Keynes said it was a good idea to have less food so that it would cost more, and that would be good for the economy. So the Department of Agriculture taxes you to pay farmers to grow less food so that you get to pay more at the supermarket for your food. And then if that's not enough for you, they then take more money out of your paycheck. So this is the third time they're going back to you. Okay? They take more money, same Department of Agriculture, out of your paycheck to pay for food stamps because the poor people can't afford the food. Why can't the poor people afford the food? Well, it might have something to do with the fact that the Department of Agriculture pays farmers to grow less food intentionally to drive up the price of food. So you pay for this three times over. In case after case after case, government is in the business of making us poor. So a lot of people talk about how we don't want to have austerity. We should tax more so we can keep all these government programs. We don't need austerity. We need the government to stop doing stupid things that make everybody poorer. If they stop making us poorer, we would get richer.
Yeah, because your final on that was if stop focusing on the deficit and just focus on keeping 90% of your money. So I gathered from that you were a flat tax fan.
I'm a flat tax fan. I mean, that's part of a larger point, which is that we need to start looking at the right of people to keep the fruit of their labor.
Exactly.
And also getting away from an absurdly complicated and an absurdly over-expensive tax regime.
How's that? Started out with the Cat in the Hat, done conservative style, ended up with a really nice talk on economics.
Yep.
Thanks, fellers.
We're going to do more economics tomorrow night.
And for those of you that are interested in the Constitutional Seminar in Yreka, we're posting all that info on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Refresh your page here shortly, and Robert will have it up. That is all. Next week, we are doing another book. Hold on.
It's KCNR Shasta Redding.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, cram that in. Tim Daughtry, Waking the Sleeping Giant.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
See you next week.